Hep tanıdım bu işte şimdi. Dişi ölür. Yeah.
Do you hunt geese at all anymore?
No, I went out about 3 or 4 times this spring with two north wind, cold, and you never. I shot a couple of times, but too far with them boys, Dick and Edward Summers. They were back there. I was back there, and Dick came, and only Dick got one. And Chico knocked one down, and I told him, "Hurry up, go there, pick it up." He was standing here, Dick on that side. There was one, and they thought I was going to shoot at it, but that I wanted to shoot at it, and he shot and knocked it down. And I told him, "Hurry up, that thing going to run away and take off." He took his time, and when he started pursuing, that goose took off, and Howard Beasley was way over there. It went over him, and then he knocked it down. Yeah. Dick asked, told him, he said, "Well, that's your first goose, isn't it?" And Edward said, "Yeah." He said, "That's my first one." But straight after that, they took off.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Do you do any other kind of hunting these days?
Hmm?
Do you do any other kind of hunting these days?
No.
Go moose hunting at all?
Just in the fall. Last fall, we were down Bishop Creek, down the slough. I shot a big bull, long wish to be going down by Pilot Mound. There's a creek there, Bishop Creek. And Archie was behind us with his boat. We thought he was going to pass us. And then, but he stayed behind. He went at that creek. He was going down around the bend. And pretty soon she said, "There's a moose down there on the bar. I see it down there walking out." But we'd stand there and was coming towards it, and then she took the wheel, and then I got in front of the boat, and the moose started turning around, walk back, and I wait, and pretty soon that moose started to trot faster. Then I bang, I hit it around here, the hair. Then I threw another one in, bang, down he went. Long way to, I said, "That's a small moose," I said. It was a big bull. It was quite a wish I knocked it down. Long way to.
It just looked small because you were so far away.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we, below there, we always camp on this side where the timber come up this way. There's a kind of creek there, a good place. We stop there. The moose is over there on the sandbar, on the bar. We're back. Pretty soon we see Archie coming. He went by. He didn't see that big bull moose laying there. He landed with him. And he told me, "Your daddy got a moose over there." He looked and said, "Oh, yeah." I said, "We didn't even see it." Yeah. And then we stayed overnight there.
Did you ever hunt bear?
Hmm?
Did you ever hunt bear?
Oh, we used to hunt bear. Not much bear around now. Used to be some bear around Bishop Creek around there, or lots of them get them bears, not much bears. Them white guys used to kill lots of.
What time of year did you hunt bear?
Hmm?
What time of year did you hunt bear?
Well, in September.
Before they hole up? How do you hunt bear? I mean, I don't know anything about hunting them.
When we see him, that's all. Sometimes we don't see him, we see bear tracks, that's all.
Then you follow the tracks?
No, we never follow the tracks. We got to see him first.
Oh, I see. Okay. Did you ever have a close call with a bear?
No. I think we'd had a close call, but when I was up to fish camp, we started coming down, and fish wheel is about the camp, and we went get some fresh fish, so I started to kick her, and I was going up, and there was a big bear standing on top of the bank by the fish wheel. And then I shot at it, and I shot too low. My boat was going too, and the whole guts blowed up here. It turned around, and Roy was not too big. He didn't have a rifle. And we went up the bank where he stand, and there was berries scattered all over, and thick willows and grass. You couldn't see it even that far. It went back, and there was blood all over. So, and I told him, no, so we let it go. And then we went back down the bank, and we got one fish in there. We came down, but a week after that, another week, we got two little dogs. They're always back there, and they're barking back there. And then Roy had his rifle, and then you could see long ways then. And we see where he went back, and he went this way and came back, and he was right here. He was, if we were following him, he would jump on us.
Oh, circle back.
Oh, that's the way they do. Yeah. And, but it was dead already.
Mm-hmm.
It was spoiled.
Mm.
They say, never follow a bear when you can't see that far, because mm-hmm. he's going to be right here, or he's going to be on this side.
Mm-hmm.
And then you, before you can shoot, he can just jump on you and knock you down.
What did the old people teach you about? Is that something that the old people taught you about bears, or did you just learn that from your own experience?
Oh, we hear about lots of how them guys get chewed up on
the
polar bear and thick willows and grass. And it's pretty hard.
Were there any other things that people would tell you about hunting bears especially?
No.
No.
Yeah, we was at Bishop Creek one time, and we stayed overnight way up, and we came going down below, and we started to go up Teepaw Slough, and we made camp on this side on the bank, and 7 o'clock in the morning I got up just getting daylight, and I pound on a dry tree, and we hear moose that way, and I thought around the bend. But she said, me, her and Joseph and I, three of us. And she said, sounds like over here. No, I said, so sounds like around the bend. So Joseph was running the little kicker, and this little one hanging on a pipe horse on a big boat, because it's shallow.
Mm-hmm.
Not this much water.
Mm.
It'd go over logs, things like that, this way. And I shot lots of ducks, mallards and teals, went to the end, we come back, so we stopped across where we stayed overnight. She was sitting in the boat, and there's a grass lake, got on top of the bank, there's a grass lake there. And I went out there, looked, nothing. Then I had a voice axe, and I pounded on a dry cotton tree. And Joseph went down there, and for sure he said, moose coming, one. And as I started to go to him, he said, there's two coming, he said. So we went down the bank, went a little ways, and the big timber over here, we got into the big timber, and we look, ask him, who is it? He's the one right there, he said. Then I knock it down, a little water on that lake, and ask him, where's the other one? We're looking around. He said, it's over there. I told him, one is enough, because not enough water. And we let that other one go. What we was talking about, this one I knocked down, it was about somewhere that truck out there.
Mm-hmm.
That thing took off towards us.
Mm-hmm.
He coming down, he had big horns,
mm-hmm.
right straight towards us. Then I hit him, he shot. Then I hit him again, it right about 12 feet from us where it finally went down right here. I was ready to jump behind the big trees, there were big trees around here, this big around. And when it went down, and he said, gee, I fell down. He was on this side, he was shooting. And he said he stepped in a squirrel hole, and then when he fell down, but he said, I jump up quick, he said. That thing come fast, it was just going like this,
took
his head down, just like a train coming.
Sure.
Hmm. And I hit him again, and I hit him two times, he shot once, I think. And finally it went down about 12 feet from us, so just scraped everything. but I was ready to jump behind this big tree. Yeah. Just like Harvey Strasbourg, they were up Novi, him and Tom Flynn. And the big grass, like tall grass, he knocked a bull down. And then he would walk right straight to it. And he had a 30-06 automatic. And when he shot that bull, I think it didn't throw the shell in.
Mm.
And but that fellow, he's the tall grass, he said, you're walking that bull jump right here. He said, and he had sense to shoot or none, but he found out that automatic didn't work too. But he said, didn't have no time. That he said that moose would have got me, he said. But Tom was walking on that side,
mm-hmm.
and that moose was just kissing Harvey, and he shot just right, and he knocked that bull before he hit Harvey.
Mm.
He said that moose would have got me. He said, no way out of it. He said, tall grass, way out too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He said, that moose would have got me. He said, but Tom was standing in the right place that time. Yeah, he'd tell about that. He would have been a goner or so. Yeah.
Wow. Did you ever hunt wolves?
No. I never hunt wolves, no.
Did you trap wolves at all?
We used to trap wolves.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. See, last one she caught, she that it got away from us, from her, down the dump. And then trap and all. I got one, two, I lost, I had that set for a link,
uh-huh.
and it took the trap, and went away with the two, I followed, but he was at the bunch, I never got her. And hers too, I down pilot, cheap horse, low, I followed it, but they take two guys, because he hear you, he follow you back, and you, when you go this way, then he's there. Here you come and two guys, two or three guys different, but yeah. And she lost one, I lost one, and Archie lost a big one up the camp too, same way. They took the toggle off and they took the trap and never got that one too.
Now, did the wolf do that or did somebody come and?
No, did the wolf do that?
Ah.
He chewed the toggle right off too. It was,
Did the people around here ever trap wolverines?
Oh, yeah. She caught one over in the slough a few years ago, too. He had it.
Oh, careful. Mm-hmm. You're going to lose some there.
Yeah.
So people did trap wolverine?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when there's some around.
Uh-huh.
He always rub your trap line all the time. You take Martin out of traps and...
Oh.
You don't eat it, I guess, but they always hide them too.
They steal them on you.
Uh-huh, huh? Yeah. Uh-huh. They eat some of them, I guess, but some are Martin, but always goes right through the trap line.
Mm. Did you ever have any problems with wolverine?
No.
Have you ever heard of anybody having an encounter with a wolverine?
No.
Mm.
They're better than... Wolves, they have trouble with them wolves, I guess, sometimes, uh-huh. but not wolverine.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
The time was at Loudon, old man used to go out, bring lynx, fox, and wolverine. One time we, now, in the store, there's counter all the way around, and then every time he come in, from on top of the hill or across the river, he have a sack full, and then he'd bring it in, then we'd untie it and dump it, see what
mm-hmm.
he gets.
Mm-hmm.
One time, he was up on the hill, and he came back, and he caught a wolverine, and then he put his sack by the wood box, and then we untied it, and we didn't know what it was when it came out and rolled out, and he said, that's wolverine. But soon they found out, you know, the old people used to make the wolverine set up and gun like this, or put lots of grub around the wolverine like that. them old people used to do that.
Uh-huh.
Put new blanket under it, and pretty soon they started coming in, and one man buggy, and tell George Jimmy, he said, tell them to put new blanket under it. And that, some people, they want you, George Jimmy told my old man, said, they want you to put new blanket under him. You think I'm going to dirty the blanket over that dead thing? And they all went out.
Why did they want him to put
the... I don't know, that's what they used to. And uh-huh. When they're coming, they holler too.
Uh-huh.
And,
was that a kind of a respect for the animals?
Uh-huh, yeah, uh-huh. That's what they used to do. And when they're coming, they holler, and everybody holler, and everybody come with grub, they go in there where they bring the wolverine, and uh-huh. They put grub around the wolverine.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And the old man get mad, that's all. I'm going to dirty the blanket under that dead thing. Then he skinned it,
uh-huh.
And the carcass he just threw it over the bank too.
Uh-huh.
But my mom was different too. She, you know, we'd haul it over in the woods and then we'd burn it up too.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Did people eat wolverine?
I don't know. I guess so.
Uh-huh.
They used to eat them, yeah.
Did you eat wolf?
Hmm?
Do you eat wolf?
No, nobody eats wolf.
Uh-huh. Why?
I don't know.
Is it just not, is it kind of tough or something?
I guess so. Uh-huh. No, I never heard anybody eat wolf.
Uh-huh.
But some guys, they said they used to eat wolverines.
What other animals that you trap for fur do you also eat?
Oh, no, lynx is pretty good. We used to eat lots of them. Just like, got good meat, just like turkey.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
What about beaver?
A beaver too. Uh-huh. We eat lots of beaver too.
Yeah. And I remember people also talking about eating muskrats.
Yeah, muskrat yeah. too. Mm-hmm.
One of the questions I was wondering about is on the videotape there's something you mentioned about when your family first moved to Galena, about a mine across the river or someplace around, not close to Galena but not that far away either.
Well, you mean the Galena mine over there, 20 miles from Galena, uh-huh. Over to the mine.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there was a they were working over there when we moved down here that fall. Summer that fall. J.J. Price, they were mining. He had 18 men working over in the mine that time.
Mm-hmm.
And then towards spring, we moved down here, and then they used to haul freight from here over 5 cents a pound to the mine. And old man Hulchis used to haul freight 450 pounds. Sometimes they haul 500 pounds, go over, mm-hmm. Stay overnight over there and come back next day. And he hauled some freight over in town. And Jack Price, he's a big man, over 200 pounds. And he just like little house from big guy. And he asked him, he said, hey Hulchis, how much do you haul me to Galena? Well, she says, 5 cents a pound. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 5 cents a pound to haul to Galena.
Just like the freight.
Just like the freight, huh?
They used to laugh about it. One guy, he didn't talk English, but never very much. And you get there, tough trailing at horses. Oh, yes. Next guy. Good trail in the torches. Oh, yes. Everything, oh, yes. Oh, yes. Anyway, they asked him, oh, yes. And then Jack Price asked him, you want to go to Galena? How much you charge me to haul me to Galena? 5 cents a pound. Jack Price used to get a kick out of that. He was a big man, over 200 pounds.
Almost yeah. Enough to make you want to go on a diet, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. And John and Tusky used to haul freight over there too.
Uh-huh.
And when there's dynamite and chaps to haul over. He used to get Larson to haul it over. Larson, don't know, he's hauling dynamite. Yeah.
This is Larson Charles.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, did he ever find out about that?
Eh?
Did he ever find out about that afterwards?
Yeah, he told him after that, he said, I didn't know. When he get over there, ask him, you know what you haul? No. Oh, you haul dynamite.
John and Old Man Holchi, did you or any of your family haul freight to the mine?
Hmm?
Did you or did any of your family
haul freight to the mine? No, we didn't haul. Just John Tosti and the Holchis.
How did Old Man Holchi get his name? That's an unusual name.
His name was Charles.
Uh huh.
Charlie Williams, I think. And then. At the old village before we moved to Loudon, he used to gamble all the time.
Uh-huh.
And every time there was gambling, and then what little he got here, he said, Albert the Whole Cheese. Albert the Whole Cheese. Pretty soon they started calling him Whole Cheese. That's how that name, his name was Williams.
Uh-huh.
But that's a nickname, that Whole Cheese.
Uh-huh.
That's why all the kids got Whole Cheese named.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah. So that's how the name got started.
Uh-huh. That's how he got that name.
That's a great story. Mm. That's great, Bessie. That's a wonderful story about how your name got started.
Yeah. Yeah, that gambling, that's where he got that name. Uh-huh. I bet the Whole Cheese.
Uh-huh.
If he don't say nothing, I bet he wouldn't have that name. Williams, I think, was his name. Mm-hmm.
Did people play cards and gamble a lot when you were a kid?
Oh yeah, they used to gamble. They just play. Yeah.
What kind of games did they play?
Oh, poker and things like that. Uh-huh. But they just gambled with everything.
Uh-huh.
Everything, guns and snowshoes, sleigh, everything.
We were talking about people who hauled freight. Did you, for the mine?
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever haul freight for anybody at all?
No.
No?
No. Spring of 21, Albert Baharnik, he came down with the mail, uh-huh, mail team, and then I took him over to the mine.
Uh-huh.
I hauled him over to the mine.
Uh-huh.
That's 5 cents a pound.
Uh-huh.
And we stayed overnight. Then we found out how much you're going to get paid for hauling the ore out to the riverbank over here.
Uh-huh.
And he came down with 6 or 8 horses that time, and then they hauled all that ore out to the river. And then in the spring they took it on a barge and took it down St. Michael's up, mm-hmm, that way.
So they had horses at that mine?
No, didn't have enough, but from Ruby.
Oh, okay.
Albert drove his horses down on the Yukon.
In the winter, ice.
Uh-huh.
Oh,
then they hauled the ore out.
Uh-huh.
The next year, Sam Kincaid and Charlie Trix, he took out 55 tons, I think, and Albert came down and hauled it out,
uh-huh,
too.
Uh-huh. What kind of a mine was it? What were they mining?
It was a galena mine.
Oh, it was a galena mine. Uh-huh. So that's how it got the name.
Huh?
So that's how the town got its name.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Silver and ore. Yeah.
Did the mine itself have a name?
No.
Mm, okay.
No, I don't think so.
You know, they sometimes give mines names, like the Lucky Princess or something like that.
No.
Did you ever haul mail?
No.
No. Mm-mm. When you were racing dogs, did you ever take your dogs to Fairbanks or to Anchorage
to
race?
No. I never went to no place till 1950 when I went, first time went, I got on sea boat, went up the river.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They just stayed around here all the time.
So that was your first trip to Fairbanks, 1950? What did you think of Fairbanks?
I see pictures of it before, that's all. And 1950, when I got on a boat, went to Ninana, and Charlie, my niece was up in the hospital, she died. And Charlie was going to go up, see her, and he asked me, "You want to go?" I said, "I don't know." And I said, "I didn't know." I said, "I might." And pretty soon he asked Turner, the main guy, Ninana, old Turner, Frank Turner. So I tried to get him to go with me, but it looked like he don't want to go, or he never see that big town yet. He said, "Come on," he said, "go with Charlie." He said, "Go up there, stay a couple of nights." He said, "But we wouldn't go down, start down right away," he said. So we went on the train, and then we got a round trip ticket, and we went up. But the day we were supposed to come back, no train. No, we fly back anyway.
Yeah. Now, when you said you went to see your niece, was this one of Charlie's daughters? Did she have TB?
She was in the hospital a long time.
Yeah. How many children did Charlie and your sister have?
Quite a few. One got chewed up with it. What dogs threw down this mountain?
Ooh.
One little boy too. That was a boy in it.
Did they have many of those kinds of accidents? Well, you know, when you were a young man, did that happen very often?
No.
You hear about it happening once in a while now, you know. But were there ever any reindeer? You were talking about reindeer down toward Ruby, behind Cochrane. Did anybody around here ever have reindeer?
No.
No. Okay. How did they get the reindeer down to that area?
Well, winter time, they drive them.
Okay. Were there laps?
Yeah.
With that herd?
Mostly laps, yeah.
Do you know where that herd came from?
They came from Unicree.
Okay.
It was at Loudon when they were going up.
Okay, well that's really good. I think that answers most of the things I thought we should talk about this afternoon. And this has just been a really good session. Thank you, Edgar. We'll have it. I'm concluding this tape by reading a newspaper article that Edgar has given me. And it's kind of fragile, and I may not get a chance to copy it, so I want to read it. It's from the Pittsburgh Press, and it's dated January 4th, 1979, a Thursday. The article headline says, 26 years later, comma, he finds rescuer to say, quote, thanks, unquote. And the author, it's a little hard to read, but I think it's Jack Botner, B-O-E-T-T-N-E-R, and the dateline is Irvine, California. The article reads, Lionel W. Levin knew he was up against prohibitive odds, but it was a chance he took to gain peace of mind. Levin's mission was to find a man whose name he didn't know, an Indian who had saved his life in a plane crash nearly 26 years ago on the frozen Alaska tundra. Levin, 48, beat the odds. The improbable story began February 7, 1953. Levin, then 22 and an Air Force second lieutenant, was stationed temporarily at a small base near Galena, Alaska, about halfway between Nome and Fairbanks. He climbed into an F-94 Starfighter jet plane along with the pilot, First Lieutenant Robert Royer. Levin was an observer, a radar man. It was 54 below zero when they took off on routine patrol. Levin, now an Irving resident and owner of Digital Alarm Systems Incorporated of Laguna Hills, recalled the minutes that followed. We hadn't gone far when the plane developed a flameout. The engine failed. We lost power. We were flying one of those early jet fighters. There were no ejector seats. No way we could bail out. Too low. The pilot said, get ready, that we were going to crash. We were probably about 1,000 feet in the air. We had to ride the plane in. The pilot did an incredible job. He guided it so that the wings were sheared off by trees. I didn't have time to be scared. I was later. The pilot said that we had to get out because the plane might explode. I just couldn't believe that we were alive. Levin and Royer, both seriously injured, crawled away from the wrecked plane, which was resting upside down against a tree. Levin was to learn later he had a broken back, broken ribs, and internal injuries. The two men tried to build a fire, realizing they could not survive for long in the snow with temperatures far below freezing. I was too weak to break a twig, Levin remembers. It looked like the end. We wouldn't live 30 minutes in that cold. Levin recalled that despite the fact he was lapsing in and out of consciousness at the time, he could hear a dog sled approaching. The next thing I knew, we were lying beside a fire. I assumed the dog sledder built the fire and pulled us over to it. I found out later that he had called a man with another dog team because his three-dog team could not have gotten us out of there. They were hauled by dog sled to the Galena airfield. Doctors and nurses met them and flew with them to Anchorage, where they were hospitalized. Levin eventually returned to active duty and retired from the Air Force Reserve a few years later. He said Royer also recovered. I asked the Air Force people and others then if they knew who rescued us, Levin said, but nobody knew. I certainly didn't know. It has preyed on my mind all these years. I wanted to meet the man and say thanks face to face. In September, Levin and his wife Suzanne flew to Anchorage by commercial jet and then hired a pilot to fly them to Galena. It was like going back in time. Nothing much had changed except the planes were newer. The village was about the same size, maybe 300 to 400. The people at the base found us a place to stay, the Yukon Saloon and Hotel, not far from the Yukon River. Nobody around the village could shed any light on the man we were seeking. We were there 2 days. We were disappointed and discouraged. We booked a flight and were ready to return home. While waiting for their flight, Levin said he accidentally met a woman who operated a flying service at the airport. Her grandfather had been operating dog sleds in the area for a long time, and she said she would contact him immediately. He lived in the village. She ran back into the airport shack and told me that it was her grandfather who had pulled me out. We were in a time squeeze. Our flight would be leaving in a short time. She drove us in her truck about 2 miles to this small house. We walked in, and there was this white-haired, bearded man in his, and I can't read it, 60s, I would guess, or 70s. It was incredible. I was speechless. He was a stranger, yet I felt like I knew him. Levin said he hugged the man, who turned out to be Edgar Nolner, Sr. of the Athabascan Indian tribe. I thanked him for saving my life, Levin said. I really don't know what else I said. He spoke in broken English, recalling details of the crash scene, things that I didn't remember because I was unconscious. He told of building the fire and calling his friend Charlie Evans to help get us out of there. He and Evans had been out looking for wood. They were hunters and fishermen and still are. It was a dream come true, a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
So now, in case I don't get a chance to Xerox that, we've got it on the tape.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.